Hi everyone, it's Gavin J, the best thing since the gloves. And you listen to Therapy Street right here on UK Health Radio, the world's number one talk health radio. This week, I talked to Susan Morrison, who describes herself as a passionate mental health and wellness presenter. She's presented for over 25 years in the UK and on an international basis across the media, online and live world. She writes and produces mental health and wellness content for the media and other sectors. Susan's in-depth knowledge and experience is founded on five-year reputed psychotherapy training, practiced as a psychotherapist until 2019, and overcoming challenging personal mental health experiences herself. We'll be talking about the increasing and trying to understand the world of the psychotherapy world. I got a bit funny there, didn't I, Susan? I'm going to say that again. We'll be increasing our understanding of the world of psychotherapy to help listeners discover whether they may be interested in working with a psychotherapist, and if so, how to look for a psychotherapist. Susan, welcome to the show. How are you doing?
I'm great, Gavin. Thank you so much for having me today. It's wonderful.
That's all right. There's so much to say there. I was getting my words all muddled up and I'm like, oh gosh. And I thought,
That's what most psychotherapists do anyway.
How's the week been? How have you been?
Well, I'm good, really. Yeah, it's been a very quiet one, actually. And to be honest, I've had terrible side effects from the flu jab.
Oh.
Horrendous.
Like what?
Oh, stomachache, unreal.
Oh.
So, but the NHS urged me to have the flu jab because I have got a long-term mental health disorder. So they were like, you don't want to get the flu. Apparently it's the worst flu in living memory.
But yeah, I've heard a lot of people getting ill over the last few weeks. Well, since the beginning of December, there's loads, especially when it was really cold.
Yes. So now it's all gone this morning, perfectly in time for this interview. Plus it's sunny outside. It's all good.
It's all coming together. Looking forward to a new 2023.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Susan, you've done loads. I mean, I just covered just a few things, really. But I think it'll be brilliant for our listeners to hear about your background, what you've done over the years and, you've worked in the legal sector before. Talk to us. Tell us a bit about your background. Okay. Let's go 20, 25 years back.
Oh, you want to go backwards first? Okay.
Yeah.
So when I was three, no, sorry, just kidding. so basically, I started my professional life as a solicitor in central London. I worked in a couple of law firms and then I went into the media industry. And my first media role was with Disney. And then I worked for a lot of TV production companies, sometimes as their in-house lawyer. And that was a lot of fun. And I think that's what got me really interested in the TV industry in particular. And I also worked for Andrew Lloyd Webber and some well-known film directors, etc. So, and then at one point I decided to go off to Sydney, which was a bit crazy. After a relationship, which was a terrible relationship, got there, no money, no family, rented out my flat in London, no job, very unstable, had been advised by a therapist in London who wasn't actually really a therapist, but I hadn't checked her out properly, encouraged me to go to Sydney, and then I had a massive mental breakdown.
Gosh.
So I came back to London and went into psychiatric hospital, pushed by various other people. Wouldn't have been my choice, but I wasn't well enough. And I was then unwell for about 4 years until 2007. And it was not, I have to say that people really shouldn't go into psychiatric hospital unless they're in a very dangerous situation because they're not really very healing, to be honest. But anyway, after that, I met an amazing psychotherapist in 2007, thank God, who I regard as having saved my life. And phenomenal. And by the way, she only charged me £5, but she was the best psychotherapist I've ever had. And she introduced me to a psychiatrist, and they together helped me put my life back together. And I then trained as a psychotherapist, which I had always been interested in. Between 08 and 2012 in a fantastic college called CCPE in London. Just wonderful. It's one of the best things I've ever done in my life. It was just met some wonderful people and very rigorous, tough, not for the faint-hearted. And to be honest, I'd always been interested in psychotherapy because I'd had a relative who was very depressive as I was growing up. So I'd kind of been a psychotherapist from age 10 anyway, really. And then I went on to be a psychotherapist for some time, continued my legal career. But having been unwell, the legal career, to be honest, it was too difficult for me because I just couldn't. It was too stressful after all that had happened. So that petered out. And so I was practicing as a psychotherapist for a while. And then I decided, to be honest, I'd sat in a lot of psychotherapy rooms between 1997 and 2019. That was when I stopped therapy finally. That I honestly didn't feel I could actually see clients anymore as a psychotherapist because I couldn't sit in any more little rooms with people. And to be honest, most of my clients were more well than I was. And I thought, no, this is definitely not the right thing to be doing. So, and then I thought, right, well, when I was in the media, I was a presenter on media legal issues, which I loved. And then I thought, right, I'm going to put the whole lot together and become a mental health and wellness presenter. And I'd done a lot in the Jewish community since 2018. And now I really am turning it towards the media, which is really where, so my heart lies in the Jewish community and my heart lies in the media. And so, you know, I'm very grateful today, Gavin, to say thank you, because this is a really important interview for me. And so here I am. I would say I'm as well as I've ever been. I don't think any of us is ever 100% mentally well, to be honest, but I'm as well as I probably have ever been. And I'm really excited about looking forward and being able to help people because I've been through so much myself.
Well, welcome to the show. And it's, you know, it's great to have you on, to be honest with you. Susan, look, let's start with, what is a psychotherapist?
Yeah, so this is a big question. And I think a lot of people, as you say, because people, a lot of people feel in need of some help at the moment because things have been so difficult and they're not really sure where to go, you know, or what is a therapist and do I need one or, you know, what happens? So what I would say is, I mean, firstly, there are a lot of different approaches from different psychotherapists, and we're not going to look at that today because obviously we could talk about that for hours and hours. So, you know, we can talk about that another time. But generally speaking, a psychotherapist, in my experience, or at its best, because obviously everyone's different, is that they are someone who you can tell anything to. Anything at all that you would never say to anyone, and you might not have even thought that you thought, but comes out and you need to say it, and that you should feel the person you select should be a person that you feel you can do that with. And the idea is that that person will listen to you in a way that perhaps you may not have anyone else in your life who listens to you in that way. You may, but they listen to you in a way which is they've got no agenda because they should be objective and therefore be able to listen to you and have no judgments. So that's what I would say is the main thing, is that you can talk to this person. And really the crux of having a good therapeutic relationship is that you get on with your therapist. I mean, I've heard people say that they are happy to have therapists that they don't really like because it challenges them. But for me, I've never really liked that. I always like to actually quite like the person.
I think it's important, isn't it? For you to get the most out of, a psychotherapist and the session, there's got to be some level of trust and rapport. Would that be right?
I feel so because, I mean, for me, at its best, when I really felt so unwell and nobody really could, you know, hear properly, fully, even though they did their best, that, you know, it was like I would have weekly therapy, in particular this person I mentioned who really helped me out in 2007. But it was like I really looked forward to going, you know, it was like the highlight of my week. But that was when I was at my worst. So, but it really was like, so looking forward to it. In a way, it was like the only thing I looked forward to in my life. And I traveled an hour and a half each week to see her, but I didn't mind because it was so wonderful. And then other people that I have seen, you know, I have liked in varying degrees, but she remains very, you know, sort of high on my agenda. So yes, I feel ideally, and we're going to come on to, aren't we, how you select a therapist.
Yeah, we will.
So at this point, we'll just say Yeah, they shouldn't give you opinions, really. That's me giving an opinion. They shouldn't give you any. See, I can say it because I'm not in a therapeutic conversation with you, Gavin. They shouldn't. They really shouldn't give you opinions because they're in a very powerful position. And if they give you an opinion, you think, oh, maybe you should believe it and do what they say because they're in this position of power. But that's not good. The idea is to facilitate you to reach your own decision, and to help support you with that.
It's empowering the person, isn't it? It's kind of helping them to help themselves in a way.
Yes. And to be by their side while they're being enabled. And also if they're then taking different actions, let's say in their life, because, you know, you've reached the, in therapy, you've gone like, okay, well, you need to do X, and then you go and do X. And it's very different than anything you've ever done before you had therapy. Ideally, the therapist will be by your side. So when you go back next week and you say, well, I did it and it was terrible, what shall I do? Then you sit with the therapist and you go through it. And it's, that's what helps you make changes.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense. And you mentioned that you've always had some good relationships with your psychotherapist, haven't you?
Well, on the whole, yes. I mean, as I say, I go to this, I mean, on the whole, yes, but to be honest, I mean, some people have the same therapist for like 10 years, 20 years, but I have, and I'm not flitting around, but I would reach a certain point after a few years, and I still needed it because I had mental health issues and I needed some backup. It wasn't that I was obsessed with therapy. It was just that I needed some help on the, you know, to keep me going. I have liked them in varying degrees, and when I've stopped liking them for long enough, then I've got said goodbye. But the thing is with therapy, it's actually very difficult to end therapy because therapists, in my experience, not everyone would say this, all the ones I have worked with, they want to hang on to you.
Right.
And what they do, which is you have to be really careful about this, is because it may not work. It may be that you do need to stay longer, and you're just trying to, you know, avoid something, and that's why you want to leave. Or it may be that actually you've done the work that you can do with that person, and that's it. But what they tend to do is when you say, "Well, I really want to leave now," except I spend a lot of time saying I want to leave. Then what they do is they sort of come up with reasons about why it is that they think you think you're going to leave, and that really you shouldn't be leaving because they think you shouldn't, because actually you've got an issue, which means you think you should leave, but you don't want to.
That's, you know what? I would have expected that they try and help you to get to that point where, even if it might be premature, but they try and help you get to that point where they maybe put a plan in place for things to go through to see if the person would benefit from leaving.
Yeah,
I would have thought there's some kind of, you know, some, I mean, obviously I don't have any experience with psychotherapy, and I'm learning all the time anyway, but I would have thought like it's almost like the way you say that they just want to get that a customer there.
Like, I mean, not necessarily a financial thing, but more because they think they need more.
Okay. To help themselves.
It could be some therapists will, I mean, you know, I don't wish to speak ill of therapy.
I'm basically generalizing. So I'm not saying all people, but when I say general, I mean, I'm talking just general broadly. There's some people that generally want to help you, obviously, and think, you know what, this is might not be a good time right now for us to stop the sessions. But then I'm thinking, are there people out there where also they want to keep that business there, basically? I don't know.
I think you've put it really well, because I think on the one hand, there are people who think, yeah, now I can really see that these things we haven't quite got to the bottom of them. So I really think it would be good if you stay, because we haven't got to the bottom of X, Y, and Z, but explain it. And I do, I don't know. None of the therapists I've had, I don't believe any of them wanted to keep me because of the money. I genuinely don't. And I had like 5 main therapists, but I don't think any of them.
Brilliant. That's good then. That you know, and that's why I was thinking, oh, do you get that kind of thing? You know, but obviously from your experience, it's probably not.
The only thing, I was going to say something, never mind, forgot.
That's all right. Brilliant stuff.
Now, oh, I know. Oh, yeah. You mentioned a plan. Gavin, sorry. I was just so sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you. You know, you said something about a therapist might have a plan and you haven't finished the plan, as it were. But that I would say that therapists don't have a plan.
Okay.
There is no plan because it is an evolving, developing self. So there aren't plans.
Each session is an individual kind of session, really.
You might be on a theme this particular relationship's so difficult, I don't know what to do. But then you turn up one day and your boss has given you a really hard time that day and you want to talk about your boss.
I think everybody wants to talk about their boss, don't they?
Ah! Yes.
We're just going to a quick ad break and we'll be right back.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
So, Susan, basically, psychotherapy, can it help with all aspects of life, i.e. relationships, money, job, etc., anything like that at all? Is that what is basically some of the main themes you find?
Yeah. I mean, you're right. I think, bottom line could be relationships, I believe, but in a way I'm speaking for myself, really. Relationships are like number one thing.
I would have thought that with a lot of people, though, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
I think us as people forever are questioning relationships and measuring relationships. I think it's part of human nature, to be honest.
Yeah, it's so funny when you're in a family, when you're in a family and you think, well, it's only mine. Do you know what I mean? It was only my partner or my friends but you're right. I mean, you're sure you're right. But you get so obsessed about your own that you forget everyone else has got some. But yes, I mean, I would say number one is relationships, whether it's family, partner, friends, boss. But then you've got sort of other more specific issues where, you know, obviously mental health issues where depression is huge, anxiety is huge. And I think those are the two major issues right now that probably most of the people in the world are actually suffering, depression and anxiety. Mm-hmm. And I think we need to pool resources across the world in terms of how we're all dealing with it and try and find the best ways, because I think we're all operating on our own.
Yeah.
Different countries, and there's no communication about that. So that's one of my sort of long-term things. But the other thing is, it's say, for example, you have like an addiction. So let's say sex, gambling, drugs. You would probably go to a specific type of psychotherapist for those types of issue. You wouldn't have a general therapist dealing.
Oh, that's interesting. I thought it was generalized, to be honest. So there's actually psychotherapists that specialize in certain areas. That's
it.
That's brilliant.
Yeah. So, and then there's things like, you know, there are some issues which masquerade, which are really depression, but they masquerade as other things like obsessive compulsive disorder, you know, where people count matchsticks or whatever, you know, they do. But that obsessive compulsive disorder is actually a manifestation of depression. And same with eating disorders, you know, anorexia and bulimia are usually underlying those is depression. So again, with those kinds of issues, you're more likely to go for a specialist.
Gosh, and bulimia as well. So there's all sorts of areas that a psychotherapist can cover.
Yeah.
It's broad. It's really broad.
Yeah. And then I think when sometimes it becomes difficult where say there's a criminal issue going on.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, just for our listeners as well, there's GDPR now. There's so much of psychotherapists, like a lot of other professionals, can't share personal information. But that goes out the window if there's a public interest and people are at risk possibly. So for example, if you've got a client that's come in talking to a psychotherapist and saying, oh yeah, you know, sometimes I wake up in the morning, I feel like killing loads of people. It's like, hold on a second. I'm not sure I can keep this confidential now. Because it's a very fine line, isn't it? Because we've seen it in the community before where people become harmed. And if they're telling people in advance, that, you know what, I think I'm possibly, I might be someone that might do something to someone. It's questionable at that point if a psychotherapy can, psychotherapists can actually keep that confidential. Do you see what I mean?
Totally. And I mean, I've got to be honest, and I have to say, I don't actually know what happens at that point. And I think from what I gather, and as I say, I should really know, but I don't, which is, you know, at what point does the therapist go, actually, you know what, I can't, I'm not going to report you to the police, but I can't actually act for you anymore. If they're sort of not act for you, but be, work with you. But if it's something where people say they've got, you know, well, you probably know about this, Gavin, anyway, but, you know, where they've got feelings of, you know, they want to commit suicide or they want to murder their partner, or I think it, a psychotherapist probably has to make a judgment as to whether this is just a thought with no intention, mm-hmm. or is there likely to be an intention. But you're right, it's like a knife edge to make that decision. Yeah.
It does sound it. I think usually at the beginning of a session anyway, or if you have to sign this an agreement or something like that, people usually do discuss, go, look, absolutely, all the information we'll discuss will be private and confidential, unless, however, for these reasons, we just can't keep that information confidential. I think nowadays, well, I don't know about before anyway, but I think generally speaking, there must be that discussion happening.
That's right.
You know, just to make them aware, basically.
Yeah, and it's interesting. I mean, a good therapist really should have a contract with the client, but not all of them do, but they should.
Absolutely, yeah, I agree with that. Because it's such sensitive information that's going to be coming across, isn't it? So, you know.
Yeah.
How would you know whether to look for a psychotherapist?
Yeah, because then you think, well, no, I'm fine. You know, I'm just not very happy, and I'm just having a go at my family. But really, oh, it's just normal. So I think it's a very personal issue. I think for me, it's a question of when you get to a point where you're going round and round in circles with the same issue in your head for a long time, or however long you can bear it, and you try to change something, let's say it's a relationship, you try to change that issue by saying talking to the person, actually, this isn't working for me. Could you possibly, what do you think? Blah, blah, blah. And if you do that for like, as long as you can tolerate it and it still isn't working, at that point, you might think, actually, I need some help because I actually can't live with this anymore. It's too painful. Or it could be, for example, where you feel you're in a rut. And you want to change your life, you want to change your direction, which is obviously a bit more positive, you know, it's a bit more upbeat to say, actually, you know what, I'd like to go and live in France and I don't really know how to do it, but I don't know if it's the right thing to do and I might have to leave certain people and blah, blah, blah. So you might go and do something like that and have some help. Actually, when I started therapy, which was in 1997. So in a way, it was quite early on in terms of very different than now where people go a lot. So I didn't really know about it. I knew that I'd had difficulty growing up with certain individuals. And I felt depressed probably from about 7 years old. And then I got to 1997 and I felt like I was having suicidal thoughts. Oh. I didn't have any intention of killing myself, but I was so black. And so how old was I? 32. But I was really, really, really black. And also I kept falling in love with people who were unavailable.
That happens, but a lot of people do that, don't they?
So I'm glad you said that. It makes me feel better.
I always hear stuff like this, though, honestly. Even on social media, I hear it. I've just heard it generally over the years. I don't think it's anything unusual, to be honest.
I love the way you talk, Gavin. It makes me feel normal.
No, but it's true, though, isn't it? I mean, it's like, for example, I've spoken to women that they say they are attracted to married men.
Yes.
You get that. I've heard that loads, you know, or they have children or whatever it might be, you know, and that's, I suppose, how people have affairs. But the point is that it's vice versa, though. Obviously, the man's involved and maybe the man is the person that's looking at someone that's married or with someone else, and vice versa. That happens. Some people, I think, they find it more attractive. I've heard all sorts. So, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of ways of looking at that. A, the other person is much more attractive and more suitable, and you prefer them, and actually you end up with them and have a lovely life. Or it's that you actually can't commit to the relationship that you're in, and you might not be able to commit to any relationship. So you always want something that you haven't got, but when you get it, you can't have that either. Mm. But anyway, so I was governed particularly by sort of a blackness, I suppose. And my best friend at the time was already, she was seeing a therapist. And she kept saying to me, you really should see a therapist. And I resisted for ages because I was scared. I was really, really scared of going to therapy. And I wonder if this is what a lot of people might be going through now, that they're scared of going to therapy, perhaps because it's like an unknown thing. And also I kept thinking, oh my God, what am I going to find when I get there? You know, Pandora's box is going to open and all these horrible things are going to fall out and I'm not going to be able to cope. You know, that was how I felt. Anyway, eventually after she talked to me for ages, persuaded me, she got a recommendation from her own therapist. And I went, and it wasn't anything scary at all. In fact, it was a very nice person. I don't know where we got on to. What was the question you asked me, Kevin?
It was basically...
how do you decide?
Yeah, you know, how would you know, basically, if you need a psychotherapist was the question. Do you know, I wanted to ask you something. You mentioned that when you were 7 years old, you were depressed. How did you know you was depressed?
Only in hindsight.
The reason why I asked that question? I thought to myself, at 7 years old.
Only in hindsight.
How do you know? Because it's at that age, it's a very young age, and depression, to understand it and actually acknowledge it and know it, you know, at a young age, I thought, is very kind of that. You don't usually hear of that. I mean, you don't hear of it. I mean, I might be getting this completely wrong, but you don't hear of a 7-year old saying, you know what, I feel really depressed. I'm sure there's something wrong, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, it's interesting what you say. It's in hindsight. So it's only later on that you knew that actually I was depressed.
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. Definitely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But then it gathered over because of particular family issues that were really heavy, and then it gathered force, you know. But again, you know, again, because of the times we're living in, I know I don't really mean to sound that old, but, you know, it just wasn't the norm it wasn't even the norm to talk. Actually, you know, I did have a group of friends during my teenage years who were very close, and a couple of them were very close to me, and they did listen to all the stuff, which was lovely. They were great, actually. But it took a lot longer. I mean, now, obviously, you've got teenagers who are really struggling with so many different issues, and we know the social media issue is huge. And I think it's much more prevalent that they would seek a therapist. Yeah. And then you go, well, is that good or bad? You know, because there's this, now we have that obsession with people needing help. And I don't know, is it a generational thing? It's like the generation above us, our parents and stuff, would never have gone to therapy.
I think, do you know what? I think, I hear this all the time. Again, I see it in social media. I think it's the signs of the times that people grew up in. And I think some people's experiences over the decades were, there was, at a younger age, you had to be more resilient, if that makes sense. And that's not with everybody, but it's with some people. And because there was some young working from a young age, they were supporting or, you know, whatever it might be. And I think over the years, things economically have improved, you know, in terms of people, there's more opportunities out there to, i.e., buy property and accumulate, you know, materialism, but at the same time there's opportunities to make money. So then you get the families and parents that want to make things easy for their children than it was for them. But then the effect of that is you're actually, if you're doing something for someone so much, you might be softening them as well, because you're not building up their resilience to cope independently in the world. So, like, for example, budgeting money, I don't hear of it much at all, especially with the young. I don't hear of it. And not all the, some of the, you know, some people save, some people are very good, but some people are not. And so, you know, and I think that makes it more difficult for people to live on their own. And it's not, and it's not always that person's fault either, because the cost of living's gone up. It's very difficult for the young to live out on their own and all the rest of it. But yeah, I don't hear much about budgeting. Even on social media, I don't hear much about budgeting or this and that. There's ways to make money I hear a lot about, which is fair enough. And in the community, I hear about it. I hear it from people generally. I'm always in touch with the community anyway. But I don't know. It seems like, and I've heard other people say it. They said each generation has become like less independent, or, you know, and that's not the case with everyone, as I said, but there's some people that are not, they find it probably maybe more difficult because they're used to having a certain lifestyle which was provided to them, you know? So it varies, I think, it varies.
I think it's such a difficult issue. I mean, now you say it, I think about, you know, what we hear about teenagers in the media is that they're all struggling, but they're more, it's mental and emotional. But you're right. I mean, but then again, I thinking about budgeting, no one taught me how to do any budgeting.
No one taught me either. So do you see what I mean? It's like, it's just something you pick up. You think, you know what? I need to be able to save money and put it away to, because you start acknowledging expenses and that kind of thing, you know, and also, and it's nice for people to buy nice things. Don't get me wrong, but there's a balance. You've got to, you know, you've still got to kind of make sure you're paying, you know, making sure there's a roof over your head, there's food on the table, and all the rest of it. I remember watching a documentary years ago, whereby they were talking to a number of people that are city workers that were earning good money, and they had no idea how much money was going in and out of their account. No, they knew how much money was coming in. They had no idea how much money was going out each month on, like, credit cards, loans, debts. And each of them found out that they're like minus X amount of thousands of pounds in debt through especially credit cards. And I've heard people say to me, when you get into that spiral, it's really difficult, and it takes years if you're actually planning to come out of that debt. It takes years to kind of manage, you know.
Well, be honest, Gavin, I went through that myself.
Okay. So,
and I have to say that one thing, well, firstly, I'm not blaming anyone, because obviously I could have learnt to budget somehow, but I remember getting my first bank account when I was 18, when I went to university, and I didn't really know much about it, but we didn't pay university fees then, so thank God. But I mean, unfortunately, there's two things. One is, do you know how to budget? Two, are you an overspender because you want loads of things? And then three, if you become mentally unwell and you don't have any income, and you don't have anyone who will bail you out, then your finances will deteriorate dramatically. Mm-hmm. And that's what happened to me.
Oh.
So I had a flat. I had my own flat in Hampstead Garden suburb, which was stunning. And because I was unwell and it was rented out. And when I finally got back into it, having got back from Sydney hospitals and, you know, it being unrented, then, of course, I couldn't pay the mortgage because I wasn't working. So I had to sell it.
Oh.
In 2005, plus it was mortgaged up to the hilt because I'd been an overspender.
Oh dear.
So right. I got nothing out of that flat.
Right.
And I was seriously in an appalling situation. And I don't actually know how I survived this situation. It was a bit of, I don't know, honestly. But in the end, I rented a flat in 2006, which is actually the flat I'm currently in now, which is a perfectly pleasant flat, but it's not like the flat I had. Although I cried over that flat for years, but, you know, I got over that now. And now I'm looking forward to what it is I'm going to buy next at some point, hopefully. But renting this flat, I mean, luckily it was new. I don't even know how I managed to get it, to be honest. I hated it because everything was cream. It was like cream. but anyway, the flat is actually very nice. But I had ended up with a large amount of debt from my overspending, and I'd gone to Sydney without money and blah, blah, blah. Huge amount of debt. I'm not going to name the amount, but it was a lot. And I was carrying that debt really until about 2 years ago.
Oh, gosh. Right. Okay.
And it was just sort of, I got them all to, because I had mental health issues, you know, all these, this is something worth noting to people. All the banks, the banks and the loan, you know, the credit cards, et cetera. If you have mental health issues and you are persuasive, they will put your accounts on hold.
Okay.
Not pursue you.
Okay. That's interesting. I've never heard of that.
Yeah. And then eventually there's this, I've got to tell you about this amazing organization, which may be helpful to people who are, you know, going through something financially, which obviously a lot of people are. There's this organization called Business Debt Line. They are possibly the most amazing organization I have ever come across in my life. So what they do, it's free. They're funded by the banks because the banks don't want everyone to be in debt. And they will help you. They won't do the work for you, but they will help you with all your correspondence, with all your creditors. And they will give you as much advice as possible to help you get them written off. Amazing. And they will spend hours with you on the phone.
Brilliant. Fantastic.
Better than any insolvency practitioner I have ever spoken to.
Fantastic.
And they also, so if you have a company, you go to Business Debt Line. If you're a consumer and you don't have a company, you go to Consumer Debt Line, but they're sisters. And they will help you and they are mind blowing.
Well, thanks
and
for
I
that,
got,
Susan.
I yeah. got all my debt written off.
Well done. Brilliant.
A whole
stuff.
Lot.
Well done.
But they did tell me the other day that I was the, because I had to ring about something, but they did tell me the other day that I got the most written off that they've ever heard of.
Oh dear. They told you afterwards though. We're just going to a quick ad break and we'll be right back.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
Susan, basically, yes. We've all heard of counsellors.
Yes.
What's the difference between a counsellor and psychotherapy? When, how does, I suppose more the question is, how does someone decide whether, you know, whether it's the counsellor that they need or a psychotherapist?
Well, yeah, and again, I think at the moment people are struggling with that decision because they don't know which one's which and end up in the one that's not suitable. But, and of course, the person who's got them doesn't want to let them go. So if you want to look at a specific, I would say if you want to look at a specific issue that is relatively straightforward, I don't know, shall I leave this job or not, let's say, or, you know, what shall I do about my holiday because I can't really afford it? I don't know. No, that sounds too superficial. I don't mean to do disrespect to counselling. It could be anything, but where you don't want to dig down deep. So you'd like a bit of help. You'd like to talk to someone who has some qualification, but you don't want to like dig down the roots of what happened when and why and how shall we resolve it, you know, which obviously not everyone wants to do that. So something fairly straightforward, I would say. It could be a debt issue. It could be a particular health issue where you think, oh, I don't know how to manage this and what to tell my family and I when to go to the doctor or shall I go to a therapist or shall I go to a specialist? You know, I don't know because I don't want to do disrespect. Please, any counsellors listening, I don't mean to do any disrespect because I don't actually know the facts. I have seen a counsellor once. It didn't help me because my issues were too deep-rooted. So I don't, please don't think I'm disrespecting counsellors. I'm not. I just don't know enough about it. But all I do know is that I personally think psychotherapy is amazing. It isn't for everyone. But if you do want to, even if you want to check it out, you know, you don't have to commit to 5 years or whatever. Check it out. You know, slightly deeper things, long-standing issues from when you were a child or big moves ahead. Very bad health issues.
That's a good point. They help you move forward as well. Basically, there's things, everything's fine in your life, but there's something that you wish to pursue.
Yeah.
Objectives, so they can help in that direction.
Yes.
As well, can't
it
they?
It doesn't have to be
fantastic.
Negative.
Yeah, and that's brilliant. I think that's brilliant to know because I think we always think, oh, we need a counselor or we need a psychotherapist or we need this therapist or whoever it might be because there's a problem. But that's not always the case, is it?
You know, I mean, it's sort of like then you think, well, shall I go to a therapist or shall I go to a coach? You know, which is another whole thing.
Oh, like a life coach, do you mean?
Yeah, or a coach.
Or any coach, yeah.
Yeah, who's going to help you move forward your career, which is going to be, again, slightly different because it's very goal-oriented. What do you want to do? How long do you want to do it in, et cetera? So that suits some people who don't want to do the therapy approach. But, yeah, if you want to dig down into something particularly historic and resolve it, or current difficulty and resolve it, or look ahead, but you're not quite sure, so you can't put goals in place. But, you know, shall I move to France, as I said, or Poland because blah, blah, blah. Yeah. And then you've got someone alongside you.
Brilliant. Makes a lot of sense. Are psychotherapists expensive, or can you get them off the NHS, or how does it work about approaching them and that kind of, you know, thing?
Yeah, well, I mean, the cost, I think people think that the cost may be prohibitive, but there are so many ways of getting good therapy without having to pay a fortune. So I would say the range is anything between paying nothing and £150 an hour. So it's a huge range. If you, the average psychotherapist, let's suppose you want to go to an average psychotherapist once a week, for where you might do it for a year or open-ended, it could be anything between about £50 and £70 per session. And those sessions are 50 minutes, which everyone gets upset about because they're not an hour. But that's how they are, because the therapist has to have 10 minutes in between to kind of get their head together.
Before the next session or something. Yeah,
So, but if you want, let's suppose you want to go, you have no money, but you need therapy. So firstly, some of the colleges, the psychotherapy colleges, will provide therapy from trainees for no money, or £5 or £10. And the trainees are not to be sneezed at, because if you go to a good college, like the one I went to, for example, which is called CCPE, you would get a high quality therapist, but they will only give you a nought fee on certain circumstances, i.e. you're desperate and they think they can help you, and in 5 weeks' time you might have some money and you can start paying them.
Right.
But there's also so there's other low cost. So, and all therapists, most therapists have a sliding scale. So they will have places for people who are pro bono, i.e. who don't have to pay. They might have two places that they'll give to people who are particularly needy, that they really think they can help, and these people are really committed. But they will check them. You know what I mean? It's, you've got to be worthy, as it were. So there are places, for example, there's this amazing place which I worked at, as do some of, well, where I went to college, CCPE, they run a caravan outside St. James's Church in Piccadilly. Now, it sounds a bit odd, but it's the trainees at CCPE provide counselling at that caravan on a drop-in basis for whatever you can afford. Now, it is quality. You know, the trainees are so well trained, and they're not allowed to be there unless they're well trained enough. So if you do think, oh my God, I could really do with a session of something, or trying it out, you know, you can just pop into this caravan anytime. Well, there's timings on the web, but that's amazing. And then there's another place called Fresh Start, which is also low cost therapy, which again, staffed by CCP people. And again, they'll offer you a range. So it isn't that you have to go to the NHS. Obviously has capacity. So usually with the NHS, if they do decide to give you, I'm sure you know this, Gavin, six sessions.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Of CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy, and then see how you are, kind of thing. Personally, I didn't find that satisfying, but it might work for someone. So there are a lot more options than I think people know about. I haven't got £60. What do I do? But, you know, it's always, and I don't know if you're going to ask me this question next, is where to look for one.
I mean, yeah. I mean, do you mean privately, if someone's looking privately?
Well, in the ways that I've just described to you, so with any potential price on it, you know, like, say, for example, you could look at the UKCP, which is the governing body for psychotherapy in this country. It's the UK, United Kingdom Council for Psychotherapy. Now, they have a website, and they have lists of members who are therapists, and you can put in your location and you'll come up with a whole load of therapists. And basically, I mean, I would always say, if you're looking for a therapist, speak to two or three.
Oh, that makes sense.
Don't speak to more, because it's confusing. And
see who you click with as well, don't you? See who you,
And then you can always ask people if they will help you out, even in the short term.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Susan, you've been great. Loads of information there. If people want to maybe have a reach out to you, they want a bit more advice on, you know, psychotherapy, can people find you anywhere?
Yes, please. I'm absolutely really happy to help. So my new email address, I should say, which I'm very proud of, is susan@susanmorristrailblazer.com.
I like the trailblazer bit.
I like that. Susan@susanmorristrailblazer.com. And I've got a profile on a website called Presenterly. And I don't know how to describe it. So can I ask you to put it in your blurb?
Yeah, in my Instagram and all the rest of it. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's fine.
Okay.
That's perfect. Yeah.
So yes, please do ask me, because it's just so important, especially at the moment. We need help.
Absolutely, absolutely. Susan, thanks again. Really appreciate it. Really appreciate your time.
Thank you, Gavin. It's been great.
And thanks to our listeners. You know you can find me at GavinJ417 on Instagram. Until next time, take care.